I've coached soccer, flag football, basketball, and my favorite is soccer because it's more challenging for these kids to get that ball into a net, but it's more rewarding for them. Any kid can pick up the football and run faster than the other kids because half of them don't even know what they're doing, right? But in soccer, there's something that makes them all want to get this ball into the net. And when they actually do, like, it's so rewarding. And sometimes, like, I'm beside myself how awesome their athleticism is and how far they grow in the 6-7 weeks of games and stuff that they play. Welcome to Faith in Each Other. I'll be your host, Jordan Howard. And on this show, I want to dive into the minds and the beliefs from people of all walks of life, baby boomers to millennials. No question is off limits as we learn together and go through the journey together of seeing where we as a society have gone wrong and where we have gotten it right. I believe that our faith in each other can lead us into a beautiful future. Each episode, I will be joined by Reverend David Williams, my pastor, and his good friend Tom Ingram, as we talk through challenges facing our society today and gain an understanding from different perspectives. Let's dive in. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our show, Faith in Each Other. I am your host, Jordan, and of course, I am joined by Reverend David Williams and his good friend, Thomas Ingram. How are we doing, guys?
Doing well.
Good.
So today we're going to talk about something a little bit different. This week on Faith in Each Other, we are talking about the wonderful display of athletics we all know as the World Cup or football, or as America knows it, soccer. Does anybody else feel stupid for calling this sport soccer when the rest of the world calls it football? I mean,
absolutely. Not me. It's our language. Thing. We should be able to call it whatever we want.
Right.
Football was taken. Right.
Absolutely. Well, with all the turmoil going on in the world, sometimes it is necessary for me, for all of us, to look at the positives. And this wonderful sport is one of them. Not only do I coach the sport, but it's become one of my favorite sports to coach. Now, speaking of the World Cup, it is now December, and the final match will be held on the 18th. Opening match was November 20th, where Ecuador beat Qatar in the opening match. Now Qatar is our host of the tournament. And it's the first time ever. This is the first time in history the World Cup has been held on the Arabian Peninsula. Can we guess why this hasn't happened before? I mean, probably the heat. So,
I think not many people live there either, though. I mean, yeah. It's very underpopulated. It's the empty quarter. They don't call it the empty quarter for no reason, you know.
Right. In 2010, they beat the U.S. and Japan in, you know, running for the hosting of the World Cup. Was this a fair competition, do you think? How do they even run for this? Do they pay? Or I don't even ever hear about the, like, how they apply to run to host. Like,
you know, Jordan,
it's never really announced.
The thing about stuff like this for me is that I think that it's okay, you know, within bounds, to watch the World Cup and enjoy it for what it is. And, you know, so maybe picking Qatar as the home city wasn't totally clean. We all know there's corruption in FIFA, right? I mean, they've been convicted for it and stuff. But I don't think that means that we can't enjoy it and watch it for what it is. You know, people have their imperfections. Right. And people have their weaknesses, and organizations like the Olympics and FIFA are going to be real vulnerable to those corruption type issues. But and I think you need to fight against it. But I don't think it's a reason not to watch it, if that makes any sense. I mean, I think that, you know, this is for us to enjoy. It's OK for us to enjoy ourselves. And it doesn't have that FIFA doesn't have to be purity of essence in order for it to be OK for us to watch it. And I think, you know, that really does tie into a lot of things that we've been talking about, where you need to stand by your principles. But on the other hand, you need to try to enjoy life. Like President Obama said, you know, it's like, don't be such a buzzkill, you know.
You but, know, I would just add into that. I was glad that, you know, it was just held in a different area, you know. just being in a different area than normal sometimes brings a little spice, you know, to the event. And that's how I just kind of looked at it, even though it had not, you know, been in that area before. This was a, you know, all around, we're still living in a time where we celebrate some first opportunities or underdogs getting chances and things like that. So that's how I just kind of looked at it, not the political side, but more of, right. You know, hey, it's in your location. I'm hoping that, you know, it's a positive experience and your people see the world really enjoyed it. So,
yeah. But it's not fair, though, right? I mean, it can only be held in rich countries.
Well, countries can't vote. Yeah.
It's a rich sport.
Yeah. And Olympics are the same way.
Right. That's what I think about. It's the Olympics. Yep. It's a rich. You gotta have rich money to host these things.
To host it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, it's a bit unusual to have the World Cup in November and December, but I think they made a good call due to the unbearable heat that they go through in Qatar. Now, they managed to get all the 8 outdoor arenas down to 68 degrees. Now, speaking of the teams, they start with 32 teams. Do you guys have any top teams that you're looking forward to being maybe in the finals, or just watching in general? Are you watching, if possible?
You know, I watch.
Be totally the race. Go ahead.
No, I just said. Of course, I watch when the U.S. play. You know, that was my friends around the world. You know, they because I've met them, they're cheering for USA. You know, unless it's their country. You know, so. Yeah, I've had the opportunity to see maybe 3 games and enjoy them. Do I have any picks? I don't think I know the sport that well. I mean, I know, you know of Messi and the superstars. But, you know, I just like the pace of the game and the speed of the game and the energy of the game for the most part. But, you know, I guess when I was there in Africa, I watched the African nations play. And then when, you know, since I've been home, I watched the European nations play. So, you know, I know more about those two areas than I know of, you know, the rest of the players or the rest of the areas, nations that are playing.
Okay.
I just root for the underdog, no matter what it is, and so I'm rooting for all the African teams.
Yeah,
the reason for that is I just watched that one Senegal, their first game, and it was such a striking thing to see them win that game, and I just thought the fans were so fantastic from Senegal. And so that's the way I got into it. But I would like to see somebody kind of like, you know, having the thing in a different location. I wouldn't mind seeing a different kind of team win the
Cup this year.
Maybe from some place that hasn't won it before.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as like different countries being equally qualified, do you see that Japanese team? They're all smaller and they're playing against some other team and they're all bigger. Doesn't seem really make that much difference, though. You know, it's a striking thing. You know, it's just like big, small, lanky. You know, it doesn't.
That's what I like about
controlling your body. You know,
it's skill and agility, and speed. You know, it's not, you know, like here in America, our sports really differ about your size. You know, basketball size, football size. On the soccer field, it's, you know, how quick and how well can you move that ball, and you can't use your hands. That always amazes me, the things that they can do with that ball with their body and feet, but not your hand. Yeah.
My wife thinks that's the best way to develop kids is soccer.
Oh, yes.
Because, you know, taking away that hand thing.
Yes.
And then it's just you're really learning how to control your body in a way. And then when you watch those World Cup guys, the way they control their body, it's, you know, I can't believe human beings can do that. But, you know, but I think it's just a wonderful way to develop because it's, you know, it's just a great thing for kids.
Yeah.
Right. And you mentioned qualifying. Now, Italy didn't qualify this year. Normally, they're one of the top dogs in soccer, and this is the second time they haven't qualified. In other significant no-shows, Sweden, Nigeria, Chile, Colombia failed to qualify, and of course Russia. They were barred from competitions by FIFA because of everything going on with Ukraine. Pastor Dave, you mentioned some of the top dogs in you know, soccer, like Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. They'll be there. Erling Haaland, Norway, didn't qualify, so he won't be there. Mohamed Salah, Senegal beat Egypt for the second time with penalty kicks. And so I want to speak about, I mean, you mentioned they're not a very, they're not a rich or a large nation or a rich, I mean, they're rich enough to host the World Cup, but what about the fans, the turnout this year? Why do you think, what do we think about that? I've noticed that some of the fans have been bought and not bought out, I guess, is one of the things. Like, they're priced out for some of those prices of the tickets.
Oh, I'm sure that's always, it is these kind of events, they draw a certain economic ability crowd. You know, everybody just can't go to these. I mean, you can have your team, and even I would say even a marginal country that comes out of Africa, a lot of its national people can't afford to go there. You know, now there you see a lot of their politicians there. You may see their presidents there or their prime ministers there. But the average person, this definitely cuts you out, you know. So you'll watch it at home. I know when we were there, when I was there for the World Cup, everybody, when it's soccer time or their football time, that no TV has anything else on it. It's only world football. And whether it's late at night or early in the day, that TV is going to have a crowd of people around it, you know, just to watch the game. So a lot of it is watched on television. And I think, you know, what I read maybe two or three days ago, so far they've had like 2 million people to pass through the crowds there in Qatar to the event. In my mind, I'm thinking that's a lot of people. You know, that
doesn't seem like a lot.
You think it would be more?
I think it would be more.
I was thinking they were in the ballpark. I thought at 2 million, maybe, you know, max, maybe I think the highest you might see is 4 million. But I thought 2 million was a good attendance, and I can't qualify that. Can you qualify that, Jordan? What a normal world.
I would say like 10 to 15 million would be more. I mean, if you think about it, the next World Cup will be across Canada, the States, and Mexico. It'll be hosted across the three. That turnout alone will easily be 10 million. You know, they don't have to, I feel like that, but it's also the size. So I think it's the size and the willingness to get to Qatar for a lot of people. So I think that number is really small.
Okay.
In comparison to a lot of those worldly events, you know.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just my
opinion. So having it there kind of excluded some people. But the other thing about it, too, though, is that to me, if a country like Senegal, or not just Senegal, it could be another country, but if you have, you know, if you're at the World Cup, to me, I think this is the way a lot of people in my community view this, is that if you have a team at the World Cup, then you must have enough spare time for your kids to be playing soccer and not just working in the fields all day. So it's like, you know, that you have enough wealth in your own country to build your own team. So once you get to the World Cup, that means that your whole country is kind of raised to a certain level. Mm-hmm. You know, you're on a level where you have enough pastime to have your kids playing sports as opposed to just.
Well, Tom, what I saw was, when I was in Africa, what I saw that every country, everybody, that's, you know, it's like when we were growing up, everybody played basketball. When I grew up, That was our sport. You didn't, you know, all you needed was a pair of gym shoes and a basketball and a hoop. And you could play anywhere, and you could develop your skills in the back alley. I played ball for years in the alley, but it didn't cost much. And it wasn't that we went to formalized places to play basketball. We didn't get into formal basketball until you got to junior high and then high school. And then you could play for your schools, and people would identify, you know, if you were.
But those skills, you were picking those up when you were six.
Yes.
You know, those real good skills.
That's exactly right. Yep. At 6, 8, 9, you were zeroing in on your sport. And I think even in some of our poor economic countries, it isn't that they had enough money, but they have so many kids. They're always playing football. Even the kids who can't go to school, they're playing football on some dirt court, you know, not a grass.
And soccer takes a lot less than basketball.
Yes.
You don't need a level cement.
Nope.
You don't need a hoop.
You can mark two sticks for your
rocks with your goals.
And I saw two sticks. You just had to get in between the sticks. But them kids would be playing, and some of them were learning at such, fast ways of learning the techniques. You know, when they got to Kinshasa, the bigger cities, then people start to looking at these kids. I have two kids now who play on Congo's team, you know, so.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
But the other thing that happens though too, Dave, is that you play when you're a real little kid, and then you have to go work in the fields when you're 14.
Then
it ends, and then you have those skills, but you still don't end up with a soccer team at the end.
That's for sure.
To me, being able to field one of those teams is like, hey, we're at this level.
Yeah. You know, now that's real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Now, speaking of how lucrative soccer is, the timing of this World Cup is actually interfering with the Champions League, which is their most lucrative time. And of course, our nation, we're probably watching more NFL than MLS. Are you guys watching more football or soccer?
Oh, by all means. I think I for one, watch more football, American football. Mm-hmm. Than I do world football. But, in America, all I can say in America, soccer, when I was coming along, was a white sport because, you know, it was more white.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Than it was black followed. And so.
And it was European. It was from the homeland of white people. You know?
That's exactly right. It was more of a European game. And so. Kids didn't.
And a little bit of effeminate, maybe.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it wasn't tough. It wasn't. Football, that develops men. Basketball, men. And so it was high school. And even the kids who played soccer, we call it soccer in high school, they were always the white kids. You know, the black kids were noted to be basketball, baseball, or football. And so it was, I guess, being introduced to it. Some kids are introduced to it later because now all of our little league teams also come with a price, you know, to put your kids in these leagues. You know, again, basketball, you know, you play what we call pickup ball anytime. You pick it up over at the YMCA. Mm-hmm. You pick it up, you know, over behind the high school. But soccer was always a richer sport. And so many kids didn't get to get, you know, really the training into that game until later. And it all depended on how financially able their parents were. But, you know, now it's in the mainstream. It's in the mainstream. I think minorities like it, but not as much as American football because we grew up on American football.
But there's another concern, though, is that, you know, my wife was really involved in soccer and she managed the finances of the teams, obviously, right? And so she broke away from the Arsenal, and then she went with Storm.
Oh!
And then she had to make her own team, and you know how Luann is. And so she ended up with like half the team was these really poor Hispanic kids. And she just talked about what if, so one of their moms sold tamales out of the back of her car to pay for the uniform. And she talked about what a great experience it was for the white kids to learn about this kind of life, you know. But she did emphasize the part about how those private clubs and soccer, with the way they run, there's an exclusivity to them.
Yeah.
Because you go on these tournaments and you have to pay for a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it seems like there's a concern there.
Yeah.
But as far as like trying to get kids out of their little group so they can have some interaction with some other people from another group that they could maybe use for the rest of their life to, you know, help us work together in our democracy. You know, to me, kids sports is just fantastic for that.
Oh, yeah.
And that win-lose thing, I think that's preparation for life, too. I think the thing where everybody gets a trophy, not a big believer in that.
See, I coach ages 4 to 12.
Okay.
I coach soccer, flag football, basketball. And my favorite is soccer because it's more challenging for these kids to get that ball into a net. But it's more rewarding for them. Any kid can pick up the football and run faster than the other kids because half of them don't even know what they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. But in soccer, there's something that makes them all want to get this ball into the net. And when they actually do, like, it's so rewarding. And sometimes, like, I'm beside myself how awesome their athleticism is and how far they grow in the 6-7 weeks of games and stuff that they play. And it's interesting because you said a lot, it was a white sport, but like my upbringing, it was more a Latin sport. Like everywhere I went, it was more Latin American.
Yeah, I mean, that's true too.
Just playing it all the time. And where I grew up, I had a lot of Hispanic friends and all that stuff. So, but it was more of a family sport. Like every time I saw somebody come and setting up the field at the park, I knew they were going to have a giant barbecue. The whole family's going to turn out. Like this was going to be an all day event. So I saw soccer more of a family sport. Like depending on your upbringing, like I didn't even watch football growing up. My mom really wasn't huge on it and any other football or sport, you know, in general. So all my sports, it was self-discovery and I just landed on lacrosse and that was my thing. But lacrosse is essentially just like soccer, just a different form of it. But the athleticism behind it, like the kids developed faster. They develop into more of a tier one athlete. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, they're not shooting a basketball all the time. But when they have to do, like you said, those amazing things with their body and then understand physics on top of it, they're actually doing math. They're using every muscle in their body to make that ball bend, to get into the net, all those crazy things they do. So that's why I love it so much. It's just, it's a different sport to me. And it's like it's more addicting when I see like the amazing things. I'm like, this is cool. Right. So, but I can't seem to catch a game because they are on Russian time frame. So it's like 3 or 4 AM. I would have to get up to watch a game. So I'm like stuck watching highlights, which is just all the good shots and stuff. Right. But, I wanted to bring it back to Qatar and their sense of humanitarianism. Not a lot of people agree with how they, have behaved in the past and they won the rights to host the World Cup in 2010. So they've been constructing and building this whole time. Their workforce is primarily Nepalese. Mm-hmm. And since then, over 2,000 men have died from construction. They have had their passports confiscated, things like that. So they are kind of like in debt, modern day slavery. What are your thoughts on that whole thing about Qatar?
And I've heard bits and pieces of that discussion. I don't have any way of understanding the discussions and of those things that are going on. And I mean that, and it's not that I don't believe it's not true. That what I was told when I was in France is that a lot of foreigners were there building and had been there working to, you know, to get those stadiums in, but, you know, their passports and visas were being confiscated. They couldn't get back home or could not leave and things like that. And I heard that from French, but I guess I don't know if the country should be held. If this is the way to discipline them for that type of problems going on in that country. And I'm not saying you don't see the problem, but I'm not so sure if, to me, this is a world event that has the ability to bring about a civility between us as human beings for a period of time. Yeah, it just, and I'm going, I really want to promote that, but I'm not saying, yeah, we gotta, some way we gotta embrace for one moment we're not warring and fighting with each other for, you know,
or looking for the most negative thing we can.
Right. And I'm not saying those things, Jordan, are not happening. I'm just going, I believe we have, constraints worldwide to deal with a nation on its inhumanity. But I'm not sure if trying to use this sports event as the platform to deal with it is the way to go. Now, I probably because I don't know enough about it per se, but I don't think that would be the way to punish them from, you know, hosting it or having people there. That's just my two cents.
I haven't been to Qatar, okay. But I've been to Saudi.
Mm-hmm.
It was 30 years ago. But basically the way Saudi Arabia works is none of the Saudi Arabian people work at all.
They
don't work.
Okay.
They don't, everything's done for them. Mm-hmm. And the plant I was in, they were 100% Filipinos people. Everybody who worked in the plant was Filipinos, and they'd bus them in the, you know, at the beginning of the shift, and then they'd get on the bus and go back to the dorms at the end of the shift. And then in like a year, they got to return to the Philippines. But I got out on some, I don't know what the heck I was doing, but my wife had a medical emergency and I had to get to the airport, and I got a flat tire and I waved down a Pakistani guy who was a immigrant worker. And he gave me a ride right to the hotel. He didn't even question it. And I gave him $50. And you could tell that was a fantastic amount of money to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, this is in the country with just vast wealth. And they have these immigrant labor pool that's mm-hmm. very underpaid. And, mm-hmm. I mean, it's easy to judge, you know, and I don't know, you know, it's hard to say, but you hope that they're all kind of raising up a little bit as they go, you know, that the guy will go back to Pakistan with more money than he would have had if he hadn't been there. So it takes time, but I know that I can tell you that working conditions when I was in Saudi Arabia for the people really working there were harsh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for that. Are there any final thoughts from either of you before we bring this to a close?
Jordan, I don't know. I only got bits and pieces of this doing the armbands. I don't know if you heard about the armbands that some of the teams were trying to wear. And the armbands were armbands, I think, with in honor of LGBTQ community. So it would have been the rainbow type of armband. And for a moment, Qatar said it would suspend the players from playing, you know, if they had those armbands on, because they are one of those countries that is very, very harsh on LGBT community. You know, it's you can be not, I mean, you can be disciplined pretty rough in that area. But I know the United States team, before one of their games during their practices, had it on, and it caused a lot of disgust, you know, there in Qatar. Again, that's a I do think that what happens in countries are there are platforms that you can stand on to bring attention to something. I don't think it should disarm the country, but at least people can have a discussion. You know, and I'm hoping Qatar will say, you know, when they saw the armbands, that they were saying, no, we don't just kill people who are from LGBT community, but, you know, we're willing to at least have a dialogue or have a conversation about, you know, why we don't want this in our country or whatever, versus just doing it. And I think there are other teams who wore the armbands as well. But you couldn't wear it during the game. You would have to do it on your practice time. And that was it. But I thought that was pretty interesting that there were teams who were put on the armband, especially because of Gaynor, who's in Russian prison right now. That's one of the reasons that they were putting that band on, is to be in solidarity with her being in prison. So, you know, I thought that was people trying to use their platforms to bring awareness of, you know, of a type of injustice in areas. And I thought that was pretty cool. Teams were taking that.
The One Love, I believe the One Love armbands.
Is
what they are. And Qatar and FIFA said no.
Right.
And they, I believe, like you said, were not necessarily to, I mean, there's a time and a place, right? Like, I feel like.
No, I think that's the answer. There's a time and a place.
It's like we all understand that everybody's different, but the Brittany Griner in Russia, in the Russian work camp, like we can support her in other ways, right? So FIFA didn't want them facing sanctions in Qatar,
right?
So they
just a huge question that everyone has in their lives, is how pure do your the actions of the other people have to be for you to be okay with interacting with them? Right? And you go, well, you shouldn't. That's a big question that we have in our life right now. One of the things that we as a nation are struggling with is how pure do the other people have to be for us to interact with them? Right. And so, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of things that go with this discussion, including and not limited to, if you don't interact with them, they won't change. The only way you get them to change is interact with them. If you just blow them off, then you're probably not getting anywhere. But, you know, that's a big Christian question, too, right? If, you know, the guy next to you drinks alcohol, is it okay to go over to his house and have dinner? I mean, it's a difficult question. There's no real answer to that. But I would always lean toward engagement. You know, to me, I would always lean toward, as a business person, I would always lean toward engagement. You know, the try to engage with the people as much. I mean, if they got a Nazi flag on there, okay, not going up. I want to help, but I don't think I can help that much. But there's a limit on the other end, right? I mean, there's limits on both ends, and where you pick that point. But I think that when you get into that thing, you get into the issue of certainty, which is one of the things I'm really into, and I think it's. There's an arrogance to it. You know, it's okay to, you know, even if you really are certain that you're right, that LGBTQ rights are important, the certainty that you come across with is still unattractive. So, you know, to me, I would always lean toward trying to engage with people where they're at, try to understand where they're at, and then make a judgment after you do that. If it gets to the point where it's like, hey, you know, I have a terrible time everywhere. Every time I'm over there listening to this, you know, political diatribe, then that's fine. But I would always try to lead toward engaging with the Qataris. And like the Reverend said, you know, trying to engage in a respectful conversation with them. And then try to have respect, you know, start with the assumption that you have faith in them, right? That they'll be able to understand that they're not. So to me, I would always try to engage if possible. And there's a limit to where you can.
You know, Jordan, can I just throw this last one sentence in? You know, yeah. Sports has been around even in the days of Christ. We've had sports. Sports is like music. It's universal. You know, it's one of those things that when we get into the world, everybody's trying to highlight their physical physique and test how well they've developed. And you can only do that when you have somebody else to go against, you know, to have on opposition. But one of the things about sports is we're not in there. And I mean this, we're not in there, quote, to hurt one another. It is to highlight our strength and our training, you know, and that's what's so good about the World Cup. And I say this also about the Olympics. You know, it's the one time that people around the world, for whatever reason, we're not at each other's throat. You know, we created an idea of not just success, but our ability to be perfect is to use our bodies and our minds to defeat our opponent, but not to destroy our opponent. War doesn't stop like that. War says, I will use all those tactics to destroy my opponent. Right. And I just think, you know, this is a time that we can learn. You know, we do want to be that much better than our opponent, but it's not about the destruction of our opponent.
Yeah. Losing is the ultimate sign of respect.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. You know, we get to come back tomorrow. I get to come back next week. Yeah.
But we accept that you won. Congratulations.
We accept that you won.
And we also know in our hearts that tomorrow it won't really matter that much.
That's exactly right. Yeah. We know when. And it may not even take till tomorrow. Later on this
evening. Yeah, it might not be tomorrow. But right now, I'm showing the respect to you and your country.
Yeah.
By accepting the outcome.
Yeah, yes, that's exactly it. And I so appreciate that. I just, yeah.
Senegal, when they, or no, it was Gambia, or the other one.
Ghana.
Yeah. They won that game, and the coach on the other team was just lighting the referee up. You know, just, and the referee gave him a red card. He kept on going. And then the coaches from Ghana came over, and they were watching real politely while he waited, while he was yelling at the referee. And then he saw they were there, and he goes, "Oh man, wait a minute!" And his whole face just completely changed.
Right.
And he went over and shook their hands, and he put his hand behind their neck, you know, kind of like a little hug type thing. And he had this just expression on his face of just the best of humanity.
Right.
And then he turned around and he went back at that referee. It was like flicking a light switch. But to me, that's, you know, that's that, to me, that encompasses, you know.
Well, you know, it almost says, yes, I felt that coach felt, you know, he wanted to win too, you know, just right, like anybody else. For his people, he wanted to win. But it wasn't, I will win at all costs, which means I must destroy you. Or, there is a boundary that.
It's just like politics. It's just like politics. You compete. But you know, right. Understand that we're really on the same side.
We're on the same field.
We're all soccer players. Right? Yeah. We love soccer. We have that as God.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Appreciate that.
It's an allegory for life.
Yes, mm-hmm. It is.
Oh, yeah. In the 2010 World Cup has shown in every single country on earth, including Antarctica, and the competition reached over 3 billion people around the world. The final alone of the 2014 World Cup was watched by over a billion people. When a nation's citizens unite under their flag, events like the World Cup have the ability to unite people and help us build faith in each other. Instead of always focusing on what divides us. Let's search for what unites us and brings us together as a country. Let's all do something to have a little faith in each other over this week. And let's go Team USA. I want to thank you guys again for joining me on this fun topic. And I want to thank our viewers. And we'll see you next time on Faith in Each Other. Thanks.
Thanks for having us, Jordan.
Thank you so much for listening to Faith in Each Other. I hope today's conversation encourages you in your journey to have hard conversations and, most importantly, to listen to others around you. If we're going to have faith in each other, I believe we need to be willing to have hard conversations, and that is what we aim to do on this show. We will see you next time on Faith in Each Other. If you enjoyed this show, please share it with someone you know. See you next time.